thank you so much for being here. And this conference has been so good, don't you think, so far?
Yeah.
It's been so good. I haven't been able to go to all of the, well, none of us have, right? We could just split ourselves into three or four, then and it would be nice. Yes, but anyway, I'm so grateful that you are here. Hopefully you all got a handout. I tried to pass them out as you were walking in, and then Heidi back there is still handing them out for those of you who maybe didn't get one. Also, I am going to send around a clipboard. I know some of you are like longtime homeschool veterans, so you may or may not be interested, but I do have a weekly newsletter that I send out that has a link to my blog and podcast, and it basically just has information, like helpful, practical tips for homeschool moms. It also has helps, like for mindset, building your relationships, that kind of thing. So if you are interested in that, you can sign up for my newsletter. And also specifically, I will send you additional resources from the topic that we're discussing today. So even if you just want that, you can sign up. I will put you on my newsletter list, and you can unsubscribe if that doesn't interest you. So just so you're aware, that is an option. So I will pass that around. And then I do have pamphlets up here if anybody wants more information. And if anybody needs a pen, I've got lots of pens. I'm used to teaching youth, and you would think they would come prepared, but I just got used to being like, here's a pen. So we don't have to deal with it. And sometimes we lose our pens, right? So, yes, please do.
I'm not kidding.
You're not alone, I know.
Thank
it's
you,
all good. Okay. Anyone else need a pen? You're all good? Okay.
If they're nice, maybe
they're awesome. Yes. I'll just pass them around and feel free to take one. I mean, they're not, like, amazing, but they're pretty good. So, okay. All right. So today we are going to be talking about the concept of anti-fragile. And it's kind of a buzzword. I think probably a lot of us have heard it at this point. When I first heard the topic, I'm like, that is amazing, and I need to do a presentation on it. So that's why I'm here. But I just want to start off. Tell me, when you hear the word fragile, what does the word fragile mean to you?
Breakable.
Needs special care. Okay. Yes, all the things, right? So today I brought, let's see which one is it. Okay, so in my fragile box to represent this, if I can get the lid off, I brought a glass jar. So if I were to just like chuck this at the wall, it probably wouldn't last, right? So this represents our fragile, and I'll just set it up here. Okay, if I say the word resilient, what does that mean to you?
Harder to break.
Harder to break. Who said that? You did. Okay, harder to break.
If it does break, it stays easily. Like, I kind of think about the, you know, the cars that have the panels that you can hit and they come back.
Okay.
Bounce back.
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. We hear a lot about resilience and the importance of resiliency, right? Anything else you can think of?
Enduring.
Okay, hopefully you can read my writing as I write
flexible.
Super fast.
Flexible.
That's a great adjective for it. Okay, anything else? All right. What I brought to represent resilient, I will recover with some throwing. So I've got a slinky, right? It's exactly what you guys are describing. Flexible. You could throw it at a wall and it would be fine. But there are some things you could do to it that it would like totally get bent out of shape and it would never be the same again, right? But overall, it's pretty resilient. It's stronger than that glass that I brought. Oh, then I'll put this here so you can, I don't know that you can even see it, but just keep it in your mind.
Tammy,
yes.
But I also think that with the slinky, it has to be used by someone who knows how to use it.
Like
there's some intention to it.
Yes, mm-hmm. I love that. That is such good insight. Yes, for sure.
A 7-year-old is not doing
right. It. Yes, thank you. Okay, how many of you have heard of the word, well, I won't bring it out yet. have heard of the word anti-fragile. I assume a lot of you have. Okay, what does that mean?
Unbreakable.
Okay.
Fortified.
Yes.
Not only does it not break, but it comes back stronger when you.
Oh, I think somebody's been. Okay, so did you guys hear what she said? Not only does it not break, but it actually comes back stronger. There's not really a word in the English language that means this. So there's a book called Anti-Fragile by Nassim Taleb. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. But he named the book Anti-Fragile because there isn't really a word in the English language to describe this. So it's not only that it's strong and it's fortified and unbreakable, but it actually means that the more you get beat up, the more stress you're under, the stronger you get. Okay, so, you know what, I don't know how to say that, but.
So is it like tempered steel?
It can be, yes. Yeah, that's an example of something that's anti-fragile. This is the definition that Nassim Taleb, however you say his name. Sorry, Nassim. Anyway, this is how he describes it. Property of systems in which they increase in capability to thrive due to stressors, shocks, volatility, noise, mistakes, faults, attacks, or failures. So that's a lot. Right. Okay, so I want you to think about yourself, and it probably depends on the moment, but if you had to put a label on yourself, what would it be? Right, there are sometimes I feel pretty strong and resilient. There are times that I might even feel anti-fragile, and there's times when I feel pretty fragile too, right? That's part of the human condition, a little bit. Okay, but think about that and put a label. And I would just like to invite you, this is on your handout, but as we go through today's lesson, I would love to invite you from God that you need to hear. I want you to think about what principles you can apply in your homeschools that will bless your children, that will bless your own life. And I want you to take away what you personally need for your home and your family. Because there will be something here, I hope, for everyone, even if it's not me that's saying it. Rosie said that this yesterday, right? Even if I don't say it, God knows what you need. So I hope that your minds will be open and into that inspiration specific for your family as we go through this lesson. So I invite you to think about that as we are going through this class together. Okay, I want to start off today telling you about the Biosphere 2. Some of you have probably heard of this, and if you know a little bit about this secret and why I'm going to share this, just keep it to yourself for a minute so we don't spoil it for everyone else, but I will tell you. Anyway, Biosphere 2 is kind of this, like this mini environment that scientists created to study how living things grow and work, what they need, how they grow the best, under what conditions. And University of Arizona now owns it. So they did all of these studies on plants, for example. And what they found the ideal living conditions for trees. And the trees in this biosphere, in this protected environment with the sun coming through and great nutrients, they would grow faster than trees normally would just that are out in the wild. But then, right before they would reach maturity, the trees would fall over, and they could not figure out why. They didn't know why the trees kept falling over when they were given everything they needed in this environment. So some of you probably know why this is. Those of you who don't, what is your best guess? Why would the trees fall over?
I would guess it's because they're protected, they don't have deep roots.
Okay, they're protected so they don't have deep roots. So that is a great guess,
and
that is exactly what I thought, and it's close. Okay, does anybody know why exactly? the wind, right? There's no wind. So in this beautiful environment that you think would be super perfect and ideal for the trees, it actually wasn't. They would fall over. So this ideal environment was actually making the trees weaker. The trees, I don't know if you can see this. This is my PowerPoint presentation right here, these posters. Anyway, so the wind, as the scientists studied this, they found out that actually the wind, so trees are made to bend and sway in the wind. And as they bend and sway, they build what is called the stress bark. So that they actually get stronger so that they can handle the wind and the swaying around, if that makes sense. So when they don't have wind, they do not build that stress bark that makes them stronger. So when there's no wind, they get to a certain height and they can't handle the height that they're at and they just fall over. So it's really interesting. I thought it had more to do with their root system, like that seems, anyway. And it probably, I would assume that wind probably makes their roots go deeper as well. That may be a factor, but in what I read, it was specifically the bark, the stress bark. So, anyway, I thought that was really interesting. There's a few other things here that are also examples of anti-fragile. You brought up one of them, which we will get to. Well, actually, I never showed you. Let me get back to that. My example of anti-fragile is metal, right? Because the more you heat it up, the more you beat it up, whatever, the stronger it gets. In fact, that's how they make metal strong, is by continually molding it and beating it and heating it and all those things. Okay, so you gave a perfect example of that this year. Okay, another example, getting ahead of myself, is muscles, right? We all probably know how muscles are built. You actually have to tear the muscles that you have existing in order for new muscle to grow and for you to get stronger. And it's not comfortable, but that's the only way to build muscle, is to tear the existing muscle and to grow more. Another example that I thought of that's anti-fragile is a pearl. Who knows how a pearl is formed? Tell me.
Pressure on some sand.
Okay, so sand gets in like a mollusk, right? Do you want to say?
It's actually like a wound that
happens
inside the oyster. It's like a wound.
Right.
That hurts it. And then it coats it and coats it and coats it, trying to like fix it to heal it.
Yes.
And then that's what causes the pearl inside.
Yes.
It coats its wound.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, it coats it with this substance that's called nacre, and I guess it's, you know, different minerals and things like that, and it turns it into this beautiful pearl. And I was thinking about it. I love that there's two definitions of the word grit, right? If grit gets into a mollusk, it will put this nacre, this protective coating on it, like she's saying, to protect it from being hurt, and it will turn into a beautiful pearl. But we also know that there's another meaning for the word grit, right? Which is like courage in the face of opposition. And there's a great book by Angela Duckworth called Grit that I would recommend that you look at as well. Okay, another example of anti-fragile are diamonds. How are diamonds formed?
Heat and pressure.
Heat and pressure, right? So diamonds were formed like 3 billion years ago, something like that. And extreme heat and pressure on carbon atoms causes the carbon atoms to crystallize and to form beautiful diamonds. And without that heat and pressure, there would not be any diamonds. Okay, one more example. This is a picture of, if I remember right, a white blood cell like attacking some kind of pathogen. Okay, so our immune systems are also meant to be anti-fragile. The more pathogens that they're exposed to, the more resistant to disease they get. The more able we are to withstand whatever diseases come our way, right? So somebody who's never been exposed to things is more fragile because they haven't built up their immune systems. They haven't built up the ability to kill whatever's coming at us. Okay, and then the last example I want to share is us. We're actually meant to be anti-fragile. We came here to Earth to be stressed, to go through hard things, to be beat up a little bit, but that is the only way that we will grow and we will reach our full potential. And we actually become better in that process of being tried and tested. So I want you to think about that as we continue to go through the rest of this lesson. I'll get my notes here and see what I had next on. Okay. I think sometimes we think that by protecting our children, and I was totally in this boat, just so you know, and I was very protected as a child, and of course we want to protect our children to some degree, right? We don't want to just expose them to absolutely everything. There's wisdom and order in all things. But sometimes I think we cross the line. We want to protect our children from hardship. We want to protect them from hard things because we love them and we don't want them to have to feel uncomfortable or whatever, right? But as I'm sharing today, that's actually not good for them, right? So there is a quote there from Nassim Taleb, however you say his name, from his book, Anti-Fragile. Would someone be willing to read that for us nice and loud?
Sort of systems?
Yes.
Systems that are anti-fragile become rigid, weak, and ineffective. When nothing challenges it to push them to respond vigorously, the modern obsession with protecting young people from feeling unsafe is, we believe, one of the several causes of the rapid raise of the rate of indolence, depression, anxiety, and suicide.
Okay. So the purpose of this message isn't to oversimplify complex issues or to be insensitive, because I know that there's lots of things causing those issues for our youth, right? But the purpose of this message is to realize that we are meant to experience uncomfortable things. And just because we're feeling uncomfortable or our children are feeling uncomfortable does not mean that something has gone wrong. And so I would like to invite you to change your mindset around that. Last year I read a book with my family, even my adult children, called The Coddling of the American Mind. Probably some of you are familiar with it. And this book, there's lots of great information in the book, but in general this book talks about the idea of safetyism and how there is such a strong push, especially in colleges and things like that, that we are fragile and our children can't handle very much and words are harmful and we have to be really careful what we say because it's harmful to our children. And it's not really backed by research. It's not backed by truth. So we end up doing something like this, right? Kind of like this kid in the with the helmet and the bubble wrap all around him. We're like being so protective that we're actually hurting. We're hurting our children. Yeah, the authors basically argue that the obsession with safety deprives young minds of challenges needed for growth, leaving them more fragile and anxious. So one of the examples that they actually share in that book is they talk about peanut allergies and how there was never really even such a thing as peanut allergies until like the mid-1990s. And then by 2008, that number had tripled. And so what did we do? We're like, well, we can't have peanut allergies because they can be serious, right? Life-threatening. So we started making sure there were no peanuts anywhere because we wanted to protect our children, right? And that it came from a good intention. But what the scientists have found, that as we've done that, our children are actually way more threatened by peanuts now, right? Their systems don't know how to handle it. So they've done research, and the research shows that if children are exposed to peanuts at a young age, there's only a 3% chance that they could develop an allergy, whereas if they're exposed to peanuts at a young age, there's when they're not exposed, if they're not exposed, then there's a 17% chance. So the fact that we're trying to protect our children from peanuts is actually causing the problem, right? Okay, and you can probably see this in so many aspects of our world, right, where there's this weird idea that we have to, we're all fragile and we can't handle things and we have to be careful and, you know, and obviously we want to be kind people, but we also are meant to face hard things. Okay, when my children were little, I had a giant piece of black velvet that I would put on a flat board, and whenever, you know those big fluffy snowflakes that come down sometimes, whenever we would see that, we would run outside and we would catch those flakes on the board. And you could, because of the black background and the fuzziness of the velvet, it would catch the snowflakes and you could see every bit of their structure. It was so beautiful. And it made me realize that it's actually the contrast that helps us to see. You can't see this structure when these snowflakes are just in a pile on the snow, right? You can a little bit. But when they land on that black velvet, it's the contrast that helps you to see that beauty. So I would love for somebody else to read this next quote. It's philosopher John McMurray. Would you be willing? Thank you so much.
In imagination, we feel sure that it would be lovely to live with a full and rich awareness of the world. But in practice, sensitivity hurts. It is not possible to develop the capacity to see beauty without developing also the capacity to see ugliness, for they are the same capacity. The capacity for joy is also the capacity for pain. We soon find that any increase in our sensitivity to what is lovely in the world increases also our capacity for being hurt. That is the dilemma in which life has placed us. We must choose between a life that is thin and narrow, uncreative and mechanical, with the assurance that even if it is not very exciting, it will not be intolerably painful, and a life in which the increase in its fullness and creativeness brings a vast increase in delight, but also in pain and hurt.
Thank you so much. Okay.
Very well said.
So, according to that quote, what is it that we have to have in order to experience joy and loveliness and happiness? Okay. Does anybody have any thoughts at this point in our discussion?
So, in thinking about this, I was thinking about, I think part of what we're doing is not just to our children. I think all of us don't like uncomfortableness. And
for
so
sure.
The family size, for instance, has shrunk in America.
Yes.
Because people want to have more freedom to do things. And then when you have less children, you can, you know, when you put less stress in your life, like you think about the pioneers, okay? They did not have the choice to protect their children as much as we do because
right.
They had just stress naturally in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I have, my youngest daughter is severely disabled and has seizures, like, she was having 10 to 11
wow.
when she was a baby, a day.
Wow.
And so we, and I love hearing this too because my older kids are now older and they've graduated and stuff, but I had severe guilt because they went through so
yes.
much in their young lives.
Yeah.
And so to, you know, between sometimes talking to them later about some of the things they went through, but it wasn't something I could protect them from. So I guess what
yes.
I'm saying is sometimes when we limit our sphere and we say, I'm going to stay here where I'm comfortable, and you're not reaching out and trying to do more, because in part of it you're like, well, you know, it'll be better for all of our whole family. Sometimes reaching out and doing more, and in my case it wasn't purposeful, right? Like, it just happened. But that can actually be okay for our kids. It's okay. And I
yes.
love that permission almost to be like, it's okay to have your life be a little chaotic because you're trying to do good or because there's just chaotic
right.
things.
Right. Thank you. That was beautifully said. And I think you're exactly right. Our kids go through things a lot of times that are extremely difficult and hard that we don't want to see them. We're like, no kid should have to go through this, right? Or I might have a really terrible day and I'm a really mean mom, right? And then I beat myself up and I'm like, no kid should have to go through this. But anyway, but you know what? It actually brings me a lot of hope and comfort to realize, you know what? God knew exactly what he was doing. when he sent these children to me. And he knew that he was sending these children to imperfect homes. And why didn't he choose to send them to perfect homes? Because this is all part of the plan. This is all part of building that anti-fragile and becoming resilient and all the things, right? Not that we want to purposely inflict things on our children, exactly what you're saying, right? But it's okay. It doesn't, we don't need to beat ourselves up. We're all human, and it's all part of the plan. And we can rethink it, that it can actually be for their growth, right? And that is such, that's a freeing thought, right? So, yeah, thank you so much for sharing, Julie. I appreciate that. Yes, please, Rosie.
Something you just said, I like what you said, and I also disagree.
Okay.
We don't want to purposely inflict things on our children.
Yes.
We can very intentionally give our children opportunities
for sure
to grow, and I'm sure that's not what you meant.
Yes, that is exactly what you're saying.
Thank you for clarifying. You know, we don't want to burn their hands so that they know not to touch the stove.
Like, exactly. Naturally.
But we can very much. We just butchered 3 or 4 pigs right before we got here. And we have kids that don't want anything to do with that. They get to help anyways.
Yes.
Like, this is a family project, and it's uncomfortable.
Right.
And when the bullet didn't work, and this pig's squealing, like, and people are freaking out.
Yes.
It actually does a lot of good for them.
Right. Yeah.
And it's okay. It was traumatic, and the two little ones went and hid in the shock tub. It was over.
Right.
But it really is pretty good for them.
Yes.
And so whether or not kids want to or not, they help on butchering day.
For sure.
Because it gives them that. So
yes.
You can very intentionally find
you.
Things that will
give have, I haven't gotten to that part in my, but yes. But thank you so much for clarifying that. My intention here is not to say, yes, we should be inflicting we should be inflicting terrible things to our children. But what I am saying is
learning,
what did you say?
If it's learning, it's okay, right?
Yes.
Yes. Inflicted, but
they're
learning a lesson,
and
we're good.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, if you can turn. Well, and honestly, there are times we do things that we don't, in our best moments, we wouldn't do, right? And I am saying that is still okay. Heavenly Father knew that that was going to happen, right? And at the same time, we want to give our children crucible opportunities where they are growing, where they're doing hard things that stretch them, and they're going to feel uncomfortable, and they're going to want to quit. And our job is not to rescue them, but to support them in that, to believe in them, and to help them to do that. And if they have that soft place to rest and to know that we're here and we believe in their ability to figure this out, that is huge, right? So, I mean, I know in my life the things that have been the most meaningful have also been the hardest, right? I mean, kids, for example, is a great example. They are the hardest thing that I've ever, that's probably not a good way to say it. They're one of the hardest circumstances in my life, and I love and I would do anything for my children. I would give my life, I would, you know, I mean, we do things. We stay up all night. We would do anything for our children because we love them so much, but it is not easy. But that's part of what makes it so meaningful and so joyful, right? I was thinking the other day that, yes, we are so used to just being comfortable. Like, even in my car, I have the thermostat set at 73 degrees, and if it goes down to 72, it's a little too cold, and if it goes up to 74, it's a little too hot, right? I'm like, something is wrong. Somebody fix the thermostat. Like, I can't handle it, right? And I'm not necessarily saying that in and of itself is wrong, because, you know, we want to be comfortable, but I also think that it is so important for us to purposely do hard things, to put ourselves out of our comfort zone, to be willing, like Julie was saying, to set the example and to be a role model to our children of doing hard things that are difficult for us. Yes?
Sorry, my voice is not loud, but one thing that really helps me is to realize, too, that our kids are capable of a lot more than
yes.
we realize. And my husband's family history, his great-grandpa, they were sheep herder farmers down in southern Utah, and a family story is that when he was 8 years old, they dropped him and his 6-year-old brother off for a week with their sheep wagon to watch the sheep, which is not uncommon through the history.
Right,
an 8-year-old to watch sheep, right? And a day or two into it, their sheep wagon caught fire and burned down. So for the rest of the week, they didn't have to have, they just were living off whatever they could get.
Yeah.
And they came, they knew somebody's coming to rescue them, right? But that was like a pivotal moment in his great-grandfather's life that he remembered, and he told it, passed down. But whenever I hear that, sometimes I think, okay, at 8 years old, he was able to do that, right? And that our kids are capable of a lot more than we expect. Not that we should go do that to them on purpose, right?
Right.
But they can
we can expect a lot more from our kids than we do. They are far more capable than we think. Yes. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it.
It's true.
Okay. All right. So, let's read the quote here by Phil Stutz. Would somebody be willing to read that first? Nice and loud. It's a short one.
I will.
Thanks, Jamie.
Phil Stutz asks, what is the barrier between your comfort zone and infinite potential? Fear? Pain? Discomfort? It's in that discomfort that your infinite potential exists.
Okay, thank you. So one of the things that I've actually learned in the last few years in the coaching program that I've been part of is the fact that the worst thing that can happen to you is a feeling. And honestly, I used to be more of the mindset, like if I'm feeling uncomfortable or if I'm feeling sad or whatever, I'm like, oh, I got to get back to happy as quick as possible, right? Like something is wrong. And I've come to realize that because I know that the worst thing that can happen is a feeling. Actually, I should say the worst thing that can happen to you is resisting a feeling. Because when you resist a feeling, it actually becomes way bigger. It becomes way more dramatic. It becomes unmanageable. And some of those issues that we like to really get away from, like anxiety, are often secondary emotions. It's because we are resisting feeling. And so if you can get really comfortable, like Phil Stutz says, with being willing to feel anything, nothing can hold you back. You're much more likely to go forward and to be willing to fail and to make mistakes, because the worst thing that can happen is disappointment or embarrassment or whatever, right? And as long as you keep moving forward, you're going to keep making progress. So if you can learn to be comfortable with discomfort and help your children know that nothing has gone wrong just because you're feeling uncomfortable or because you're feeling sad or whatever, that's part of being a human and it's totally fine, then nothing can really hold you back. Let's read here the poem. I guess we'll call it a poem. It doesn't rhyme, so is it still a poem?
Yes.
Anyway, but somebody read Risks nice and strong. Thank you.
Okay, so I got to say, I actually read it ahead. And it's really good, you guys.
It is really good. That's why you did it. Okay.
Stand up and give appreciation.
Yeah.
I'll use my teacher voice. Risk. To laugh is to risk appearing a fool. To weep is to risk appearing sentimental. To reach out to another is to risk involvement. To expose feeling is to risk exposing your true self. To place your ideas and dreams before a crowd is to risk their loss. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To live is to risk dying. To hope is to risk despair. To try is to risk failure. But risk must be taken, because the greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing. The person who risks nothing, does nothing, has nothing, is nothing. He may avoid suffering and sorrow, but he cannot learn, feel, change, grow, or live. Chained by his servitude, he is a slave who has forfeited all freedom. Who risks is free.
Thank you. Are there any thoughts anyone would like to share before we move on to the next part? You seemed like very taken by this, so if you have some thoughts, I love to hear.
Like for me, I don't care. Like I will be a risk taker. That's totally fine. But for me personally, if I think it's going to impact somebody else, that's where I start to question myself. It's like, okay, well, if I start crying at something, is somebody going to feel uncomfortable? So it's not the risk to myself. It's the risk. It's more of like, how is this going to impact others? I don't know if anybody else feels that way too. Yeah, see, there's a couple heads going up and down. But it's just trying to figure out, okay, so is it, I'm not, because I'm willing to cry and be vulnerable, but not to somebody else's discomfort. So I'm just trying to figure out how that plays into all of the stuff that we've been talking about with being anti-fragile. Yeah. So is that me trying to be anti-fragile, or is that me trying to protect somebody else?
Yes, you have a thought, Rosie.
Just to follow that up, I heard a speaker who was in a wheelchair. She actually fell off a cliff and became...
she's fantastic.
She's incredible. Yeah. But she talks about her brother, who was on his knees pleading with the Lord, please let me have it. Not her, not Meg. Like, she doesn't deserve this. Please give it to me. And the Lord just said, how dare you? How dare you, want to take that from her? Like, this is for her. And it just kind of really, shot him back. So even at the risk of making others feel uncomfortable, this whole concept is, anti-fragile, what a gift to give other people,
right,
too.
Right.
It's okay if they're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Let them live in their discomfort and
right?
grow.
It's a total mindset.
What a gift we're giving,
right,
them.
Like, we think that we're hurting people by crying in front of them or whatever. Like, I used to feel that way around my kids. I'd be like, oh, I can't cry around my kids. I got to go in my room and cry and whatever. I have become much more open than I ever used to be. I will cry wherever I'm at. And I'm not saying that you need to decide, obviously. But I think that it is important for us to not try to manage other people's emotions, maybe is the principle, right? Because especially if you're not trying to hurt anybody, right? You also don't need to protect somebody else, because we are all meant to be anti-fragile. And I think that that's common. I also think it's common. We want to protect our children from whatever it is that we're experiencing. But I just heard Rosie yesterday. I hope you don't mind me bringing this up. She went through a grieving experience, and her children watched her go through that. And the way you described it was a growing experience for them. It was a beautiful opportunity for them to rally around you and to help you. And sometimes you as a mom need to do something that might make your family uncomfortable, and that's okay. Does that make sense? It might inconvenience them. I think we're wired to have ourselves revolve around whatever everybody else's needs are, and that's not necessarily wrong if it's in balance, but it's okay for you to have needs and for your children and your husband or whatever to also realize that and to be uncomfortable too. That's my opinion. Any other thoughts? Yes.
I agree with you on that, because I think a lot of times, especially with, I'm a dude, right? So a lot of times we have that.
We appreciate the dude's perspective.
Just letting it out there, you never know. But allowing that vulnerability for your children to see as a male in the home, being able to be open with your own feelings. Because a lot of times they have this perspective of, we're up here, we have to be high and mighty, nothing bothers us, things like that. But if we're willing to go down to their levels to show our depth and abilities to that sucked, that was really hard, then the kids go, okay, I understand that, I can see that. Because as you're growing up, especially for a lot of people, you see your dad as someone who's never,
it's true.
He never breaks until you find him in the garage drinking or something. Some other way to deal with it, right? And so I think for our children nowadays, especially because they have the internet and all the social media stuff, everything's so fake, what's truly real, and the only way to really show what's real is emotion. And I think that's a great concept. And I know today there's a good thing on self-defense they're doing, the Gorham family, I know. But it's like jiu-jitsu, because I practice that as well. But it's a good thing because you have to be present in order to not die in that situation. So I think a lot of times when we're reserving our emotions or anything like that, we're not being present.
Yeah.
I think that's hard for a lot of people to be able to be anti-fragile if you're not present.
Yes. Thank you. I love that concept of being present. And I especially appreciate you being willing to share that as a man, it's really important for you to be vulnerable. Because I think a lot of times our young men especially are cultured to think that they're weak if they're showing emotion. And that's absolutely not true, right? They are humans. They might show it different than us women with crazy hormones or whatever. I don't know. But you're still a human. And to be willing to show that, and to show that just because I'm crying or just because this is hard, it doesn't mean I'm weak. It means that I'm human and I'm still moving forward.
Yeah, and you have the strength to admit it, too.
Yes.
I think it's the best.
And it takes a lot of strength to do that, right? Yeah. To be vulnerable like that. So thank you. I really appreciate everyone's comments. Is there anyone else who has something? Yes.
Being my occupation, I think the word anti-fragile. You hold up the steel and cat over here, said, don't you dare, Seth. Okay, I'm a farmer.
Yeah.
And the word anti-fragile, you said, it's like, it's not breakable. I don't believe that's my thing is, no, it is breakable.
Okay.
But it can be repaired stronger. Because I'm
going to
break.
Yeah.
I have emotions.
Yeah, and it probably didn't mean break, but yes.
Right. I mean, and I'm not that I'm solo in this, but there's been suicide. There's been...
Exactly.
You don't just walk away not being broken sometime in your life.
Yes.
You will be shattered.
100% agree.
It can be all these scenarios, but the word anti-fragile, as I look at it, I said, okay, but I can be repaired to a state where I can have sympathy for that child. I can understand his emotion because I'm there. I can understand her grief for losing a child because I've done that. I am not going to take that upon myself. I'm going to keep myself. I'm going to be happy regardless, even though I was broken.
Right. And you have a different depth and a different capacity to give and to relate with people because of what you went through. But absolutely, I've been in those moments where I've been absolutely shattered and broken. And now I look back and sometimes they're still hard, right? Sometimes I'm still in the moment of this still stinks. I hate it. But I also have grown a lot, right? And I'm becoming stronger and I'm becoming better. Thank you for those comments. I totally agree. Anyone else want to share anything?
I would.
Yes.
So I was raised in a safe home. Mm-hmm. And so risk was defined really as anything you did that would cause injury to yourself or someone else or be affecting to someone else's emotions. And so as I became an adult, understanding what risk was, my choices in that space reflected how I was raised. But now as a later adult, I know I refer as my young adult, my later adult, because I've had some years, but, and some life, right? We've had some years and we have some life, we get redefined.
For sure.
And risk now looks so much different. Like my kids jumping me up and down on scaffolding, they're at the, like, I'm like, oh, they're fine. It's 8 foot in the air. They're fine. Somebody's upset that my child's running up and down bleachers that are the safest bleachers.
Yes.
You know, they're not the ones that are going to climb through and fall down. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, they run on scaffolding every day. It's fine. Like, so defining risk has been redefined and can continue to be redefined in life.
Thank you.
So
thank you for that insight. I appreciate that. Yeah, I have 3 crazy boys. And my oldest boy, you guys know my voice. Some of you, so they're laughing because it's true. Anyway, my oldest is maybe the craziest. I'm not sure how to rank him exactly. But he was constantly doing things to me that were just like crazy risky. And I couldn't control it at all. And I remember being at a science fair, and he was like mixing different chemicals with fire and whatever. And the moms were all like, you let him do that? And I'm like, well, here's the thing. If I don't let him do it, then he will just go secretly do it and blow himself up. And he has like almost blown up his brother before. Like, that's not even a joke. So you learn to work with different circumstances, right? And your personalities of your children. And help them to take risks that can help them in a way that they don't blow themselves up. Hopefully it's not irrecoverable, right? Did you have a hand? Somebody had a hand, I think.
I just said anytime you risk, you put your heart on the line. Because
it's true.
And so
that's
like
really good insight.
It's like, okay, because it's vulnerable and you feel it.
So. Yeah, thank you. That's beautiful insight. Okay, we're going to move on here. If you were to define failure, how would you define it? What do we have here? An opportunity to learn. You're ahead of the game here. I love it. Yeah. Any other things, thoughts about it?
I think there are different kinds of failure. You fail when you quit, when you stop.
Yes.
That's probably the ultimate kind of failure. And then there's the failure that they're talking about where you learn from it. And that way you want to fail as often as possible.
Yes.
So that way you can learn and grow.
Yes. Right. Thank you.
Could failure be so simple as like an unexpected outcome?
Yeah, it could be, for sure. I totally think you could define it that way.
Failure is when you don't learn from
the experience. Failure is when you don't learn from the experience. I love that. I hadn't even thought of that, but I 100% agree. Right? You can also, this kind of goes along with what you said, but you can also fail ahead of time by just avoiding the risk. Right? Like, I'm not even going to go there because I don't want to fail. I used to be a little bit more that way, honestly. I'm like, I don't want to do that unless I can be really good at it. Right? It's not super comfortable for me, honestly, to stand up and speak in front of adults. It's not my forte like some of us in the room. I should, anyway. Rosie's just such a natural. Probably others of you are, too. But you can fail ahead of time by not being willing to put yourself out there. Because you don't want to be uncomfortable. You don't want to look dumb. You don't want to whatever, right? But I loved whatever all of you probably said versions of this. If you're willing to continue to put yourself out there, there is really no failure if you're willing to learn something from it and get up and to keep trying. And honestly, the more fails you have, the more learning you're going to have. So I would invite you to rethink about how you think about failure as well. I said that really weird. But rethink failure, the idea of failure, and be willing to put yourself out there because it is an opportunity for growth. And as you model that for your children, they are more willing to put themselves out there and to do uncomfortable things as well. Like, I've invited my children and tried to model to them more recently that I'm going to try to have 3 big fails this month, right? I'm going to try to put myself out there and do something crazy that I never would have wanted to, right? And then talk to them about that and invite them. That is one way you can help them. Okay, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of this, but tell me what the difference is between fixed versus growth mindset. It has a lot to do with what we're talking about. It's a term coined by Carol Dweck. And I love this thinking. Can anybody tell me what is fixed versus growth mindset? Put you on the spot. Okay. So, yes.
Yeah, I think if I'm remembering what you're talking about, like a fixed mindset, this is how I am. This is all I have to work with.
Right.
And I can't change the circumstances. I can't change myself.
Exactly.
And then the growth mindset is more, I have endless capabilities. I have endless resources,
yes.
And as long as I keep trying, I can change myself, I can change my situation.
Exactly. Yes, beautifully said. Okay, I'm going to tell you a little fictional story that I read in the book. I think it's called Do Hard Things by, what is it, the two twins. Can't think of their names. Alex and Brett Harris. Is it Harris? It's probably my same last name. I think it is Harris. That's ridiculous. Anyway, they share this story. They share this story in their book. And it's about this man who comes and he sees, I have a picture. He sees this elephant who is tied with a really thin rope on the back of his leg. And he's just sitting there staked to the ground with this little tiny rope. And the guy is like, what in the world? That elephant is clearly strong enough to break that tiny rope. Why is he standing there? So he asks the trainer, and the trainer's like, well, when they are babies, we tie them up with this rope, and it is too strong for them. And they pull, and they pull against it, and they find out that they cannot break the rope. And they basically have a fixed mindset. They think that they are stuck even though they're not. So they don't even try to break free of the rope that is holding them back. I actually have a dog like this. He, from the time he was a puppy, we would put him behind this tall, that was tall when he was a puppy, gate. And he couldn't jump over it. And now he's a doll and he totally made him jump over it. But he thinks he can't, so he just sits behind the gate. Anyway, how many of us do that? How many of us have that learned helplessness or that fixed mindset where we think we're capable or incapable or we're stuck in something that we think we can't overcome, right? Now, there are obviously things that all of us have that are out of our control to some degree, right? And I'm not talking about those things. I'm talking about things that are within our control, a mindset shift where we feel stuck. So I would invite you just to take a moment. On your handout, I believe there's a question. What is one belief you've held on to that has held you back? What can you do to break the bondage of that belief? Okay. We're running out of time, so I'm trying to figure out how to shorten this. Who can tell me what alchemy is?
Turning metal into gold.
Yeah, so it's like the forerunner of chemistry. They used to think that they could turn other kind of metals. They were like doing all this, you know, whatever, experiments, trying to figure out if they did certain things, could they turn another metal into gold, right? So we can also alchemize the stressors and the hardships in our life for our growth, right? A lot of times, what you said, we are broken down, just like a muscle. We do break. We're torn down. But in the process of rebuilding, we can actually become stronger. And I believe that the ultimate alchemizer is Jesus Christ, especially when we give our struggles to him and he helps us to see the truth and to see things through his perspective and through his atonement. He gives us an enabling power that we don't have on our own that allows us to grow through struggles. So if we could please read, I'm skipping a little bit here, but if we could please read the scripture in Isaiah, if you'll skip down a little bit, I'm not sure where it's at on your... It's Isaiah 61:3. I believe it's on your handout. Would somebody be willing to share that with us nice and loud? Thank you.
To appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness.
Okay. So it is our Savior Jesus Christ that has the ability to turn the ashes in our life into beauty. And to really alchemize and transform us into our fullest potential. I would also love to read the quote by David Bednar. I love this quote. So look for what brings power in this quote. And would somebody be willing to read this? Thank you.
Living in convenience does not bring power. The power we need to withstand the heat of our day is the Lord's power. His power flows through our covenants with him. To lean in with our faith when facing strong headwinds, to sincerely strive each day to do what we covenanted with the Savior we would do, even and especially when we are tired, worried, and wrestling with troubling questions and issues, is to gradually receive his light, his strength, his love, his spirit, his peace. The point of walking the covenant path is to approach the Savior. He is the point, not our perfect progress. It is not a race, and we must not compare our journey to others. Even when we stumble, he is there.
Thank you. Okay, as we wrap up, I just want to share this story, and hopefully this poem. If we don't get to the poem, you can read it on your own. It's on your handout. But the first time I heard about the concept of anti-fragile was from a podcast, and she was actually talking about Joseph of Egypt. So I wanted to share this story as we wrap up. But Joseph is a great example of someone who was anti-fragile. If you remember, I'll try to summarize the story quickly, but he was given a coat by his father, and his brothers were quite jealous of this coat, so they took him and they were going to throw him in a pit. And then it happened to be that a band of Ishmaelites were coming by, so they decided to sell him instead. So they sold their little brother to this band of Ishmaelites. The Ishmaelites ended up selling Joseph to Potiphar. We kind of know what happens there, right? Joseph, it seemed like everything was going wrong, right? Like, he was sold away from his brothers. But he knew how to turn to the Lord, and not only was he ended up becoming very strong politically, but he was very strong spiritually. And no matter what happened to him, he kept turning to God, and God would alchemize whatever terrible circumstances he was in, not only for his benefit, but really for the benefit of his whole family, for the benefit of Egypt, right? So we know the story with Potiphar. His wife wanted to be intimate with him. He refused. She turned him in. So he ended up going to prison. It's like Joseph can't get a break, right? It's like he just keeps getting kicked down. So he's in prison. He ends up being the right-hand man of the warden there, right? And there's a couple of people who are in prison, the baker and the cupbearer. He ends up translating their dreams, and they end up being correct. So a few years later, when the cupbearer is in the Pharaoh's court, and Pharaoh is having a dream that needs interpreted, the cupbearer remembers Joseph. So they pull him out of prison to come and interpret the Pharaoh's dream. And Joseph interprets his dream and tells him, yes, there's going to be 7 years of plenty, and then there's going to be 7 years of famine. Pharaoh is so impressed with Joseph that he ends up bringing him forward, and he ends up being second in command to the Pharaoh after everything that has happened to him, because God used him and he turned to God. So not only did he end up blessing his family because of that, but he ended up saving Egypt because he was willing to be used. So this is such a beautiful example of someone who turned to God, who believed in his purpose and knew that with God he could do whatever God needed him to do. Do we have time to read the poem at the end? Are we okay, Peggy? 2 minutes. Okay. So I would love to close. We started off with a story about the biosphere tree, so I wanted to end with this poem, Good Timber. This was actually one of my dad's favorite poems, and he had it memorized. I should memorize it in honor of him. We worked on it for a while, but I never had it polished, so we're going to read it. But my dad passed away a couple of years ago, and so this poem is especially meaningful to me, but it totally just wraps up all these ideas into one beautiful poem, what anti-fragile means. So is there someone who would love to read it? Oh, three of you. How am I going to pick? Who hasn't had a turn? Rosie, you have a nice strong voice. I'll let you do it.
This is one of my all-time
favorites. Yes, I love it.
The tree that never had to fight for sun and sky and air and light, but stood out in the open plain and always got its share of rain, never became a forest king, but lived and died a scrubby thing. The man who never had to toil to gain his farm, to gain and farm his patch of soil, who never had to win his share of sun and sky and light and air, never became a manly man, but lived and died as he began. Good timber does not grow with ease. Stronger wind, stronger trees. The further sky, the greater length, the more the storm, the more the strength. By sun and cold, by rain and snow, in trees and men, good timbers grow. Where thickest lies the forest growth, we find the patriarchs of both, and they hold counsel with the stars, whose broken branches show the scars of many winds and much of strife. This is the common law of life.
So I just want to wrap up, tell you are stronger than you think, and I would invite you to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Invite your children to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and tap into that power of the atonement of Jesus Christ, because he is the ultimate alchemizer and he can help transform your child into something beautiful. And I testify that's true and say it in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Amen. Thank you all for your comments and just everything that you shared, and for being present and being here today. It's such a gift to share this time with you, so thank you.
Everybody told me.
Yeah, I asked because I was like, I don't want to carry around.